Good evening. A plot by a nationalist militia to kidnap Michigan's governor is foiled by the FBI. Trump says he won't participate in a virtual debate. The nuclear football and protests against a new city COVID lockdown in Brooklyn turn violent for another night. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Protests over lockdowns and state orders to wear masks to combat the COVID-19 pandemic are reaching a fever pitch across the United States. Michigan has been a flashpoint. Today, 13 people, including seven men associated with the Wolverine Watchmen militia group, have been arrested for alleged plots to take the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, hostage and attack the Capitol, state Capitol building. United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, Andrew Burge, made the announcement today.
Last night, the FBI and Michigan State Police arrested six individuals charged in a federal complaint with conspiring to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. According to the complaint, unsealed this morning, Adam Fox, Barry Croft, Ty Garbin, Caleb Franks, Daniel Harris, and Brandon Caserta conspired to kidnap the governor from her vacation home in the Western District of Michigan before the November election. Under federal law, each of these individuals faces a term of any number of years up to life in prison if convicted. Fox, Garbin, Franks, Harris, and Caserta are residents of Michigan. Croft is a resident of Delaware.
Burge went on to outline the indictment.
The alleged conspirators used operational security measures, including communicating by encrypted messaging platforms, and used code words and phrases in an attempt to avoid detection by law enforcement. Among other activities, members of this conspiracy on two occasions conducted coordinated surveillance on the governor's vacation home. Fox and Croft, in particular, according to the complaint, discussed detonating explosive devices to divert police from the area of the home. And Fox even inspected the underside of a Michigan highway bridge for places to seat an explosive. The complaint further alleges that Fox purchased a taser for use in the kidnapping and that the group successfully detonated an improvised explosive device wrapped with shrapnel to test its anti-personnel capabilities. The FBI and state police executed arrests of several of the conspirators when they were meeting on the east side of the state to pool funds for explosives and exchange tactical gear. This investigation is ongoing. Agents of the Detroit Field Office of the FBI and other members of their Joint Terrorism Task Force, including the Michigan State Police, are conducting this investigation.
And that is the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan speaking about today's indictment of 13 people in a plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan. And you're listening to news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In Washington, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is questioning President Donald Trump's fitness to serve. She announced legislation Thursday creating a commission to allow Congress to intervene under the 25th Amendment to the Constitution and remove the president from executive duties. Pelosi said Trump needs to disclose more about his health after his COVID-19 diagnosis. Trump responded swiftly via Twitter, "Crazy Nancy is the one who should be under observation. They don't call her crazy for nothing," the president said. Congress is not in legislative session, and so any serious consideration of the measure, let alone votes in the House or Senate, is unlikely. Pelosi's move came after she said earlier Thursday that she was at the table, still ready to negotiate a coronavirus aid package. But Pelosi said legislation to prop up the airline industry, which has laid off thousands of workers, could only come as part of a larger aid package, which Trump opposes.
Been very open to having a single standalone bill for the airlines or part of a bigger bill. But there is no standalone bill without a bigger bill. There is no bill, because you asked the second question, why should we do one, not the other? Right. And so the comment that I made to the administration last night was, we're happy to review what that standalone bill would look like as part of a bigger bill, if there is a bigger bill. But there is no standalone bill. If we don't have a guarantee that we're going to be helping our state and local employees, that we're not going to be able to crush the virus, that we're not going to be able to have our children go to school safely, that we're not going to have safety in the workplace, that we're not going to address unemployment, that we're not going to have them. And some of these issues, we have come to some area of agreement, but some of them we have not. But they have walked away from the whole package. And that includes 17 million children in the country food insecure, millions of their families on the verge of eviction. And the president says, well, I'll do these three things. No, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
And that's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. President Trump says he won't participate in the next presidential debate. The announcement just minutes after the Commission on Presidential Debates announced a virtual debate for October 15th. Trump told Fox Business Maria Bartiromo the commission is trying to protect Democratic candidate Joe Biden.
I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate. That's not what debating's all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous. And then they cut you off whenever they want. I have a host who I always thought was a nice guy, but I see he's a never-Trumper. You know, it came out that he's a never-Trumper. We do have some of them, Maria, believe it or not, because they don't like to win.
I'm not doing a virtual debate.
They didn't even tell us about the debate, Maria.
So you just learned this morning?
Yeah, we learned it the same way you learned it. They called up 2 minutes ago, and it was announced. And they're trying to protect Biden. Everybody is.
Address the criticism, Mr. President. The criticism that you removed your mask for a photo op. You got to the top of the steps. You removed it. People are worried about your recent diagnosis. Now you've got 30-plus people with coronavirus in and around the White House. Address that concern for us, Mr. President. As you tell the Commission on Debates, you're not going to do this virtually.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think I'm better when to a point where I'd love to do a rally tonight. I wanted to do one last night. But I think I'm better to a point that I feel better than I did, I jokingly said 20 years ago. I feel perfect. I got it knocked out. I think it was Regeneron that was responsible for it. Because of that, it was sort of like almost a gift from heaven because of what I went through. And I had I felt pretty lousy. A lot of people did. A lot of people do. You know, no matter how good the security, you're not going to protect yourself from this thing with just your standard anything, unless you just literally don't come out. And even those people found out. Did you see in New York City, the most heavily locked down place, the people that caught it the most were the people that were caught in their houses and their apartments, okay?
As President Trump, it was Trump's first interview since being treated for the coronavirus. Trump mentioned Regeneron, an antiviral drug based on the use of antibodies. It was developed by the Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Company under a $450 million grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Defense. The grant is part of a federal government's Operation Warp Speed to accelerate the distribution of COVID-19 drugs and vaccines. On Wednesday, the company filed a request with the Food and Drug Administration to begin distributing the drug without official approval. The company is yet to complete required safety trials of the drug. Also on Wednesday, President Trump posted a 5-minute video on Twitter asserting that millions of doses of the drug were available and that Regeneron should be distributed for free.
I went in, I wasn't feeling so hot, and within a very short period of time, they gave me Regeneron. It's called Regeneron. And other things too, but I think this was the key. But they gave me Regeneron, and it was like unbelievable. I felt good immediately. I felt as good 3 days ago as I do now. So I just want to say we have Regeneron. We have a very similar drug from Eli Lilly, and they're coming out, and we're trying to get them on an emergency basis. We've authorized it. I've authorized it. And if you're in the hospital and you're feeling really bad, I think we're going to work it so that you get them and you're going to get them free. And especially if you're a senior, we're going to get you in there quick. We have hundreds of thousands of doses that are just about ready. I have emergency use authorization all set, and we got to get it signed now.
And as President Trump, again, since Trump announced he was taking the drug over the weekend, share prices of Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Incorporated have increased by more than 2%. Eli Lilly, also mentioned by the president, has seen a 3% jump in its stock prices over the last few days. Regeneron was first manufactured with a stem cell line obtained from an aborted fetus in the 1970s, but if approved, all future doses will be made from an artificially produced line of cells. And Secret Service agents have been complaining about being forced to accompany the COVID-infected commander-in-chief, potentially endangering themselves and their families. And it's been reported that Lieutenant Commander Jaina McCarron, the White House military office aide who often carries the nuclear football, which follows the president at all times and provides access to the U.S. nuclear arsenal, has contracted COVID-19. She last traveled with Trump to Bedminster, New Jersey. The football is a briefcase with the codes needed to launch a nuclear attack. The policy director for the Plowshares Fund is Tom Colina. He's written an article for the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists calling for an end to the football and the power of the president to launch a nuclear attack on his individual whim.
Origins of that name are unclear.
Is it a machine?
It's three things. It's a communication device of some kind that would allow the president to communicate with the war room in the Pentagon. It has a book with options for nuclear attacks. Either on his person or in the briefcase, he would have a set of codes that he would use to identify himself to the officer in the Pentagon who would need to make sure that this was actually the president on the other end of the line. They're called the gold codes, and there's challenge codes. So the White House has, the president has codes, and then the officer of the Pentagon has codes, and they both have to sort of do dual validation.
Somebody actually accompanies the president everywhere with this football?
There's a military aide. It cycles through the different military services. But the aide follows the president 24/7, 365, has to be in the same elevator if possible with the president, on the same helicopter, on the same airplane, is always in close proximity to the president. Yeah. And there are multiple military aides who can step into this job. The concerning thing is that the president has COVID because the president is the decider. The president has the sole authority to order the use of U.S. nuclear weapons. If the president decides to use them, there is nobody in the chain of command that can counteract that order, and it can be sent and implemented in a matter of minutes. At the same time, we know that anyone with COVID, and particularly in the president's case, if you have low oxygen levels in your blood, it's going to affect the clarity of your thinking. The president is taking heavy medications, including steroids, that can cause anxiety and mood disorders. And so the fact that there's really only one person standing between us and nuclear destruction, that person has COVID and is on heavy meds, should be a cause for concern for all.
And I think most of us didn't know that that potentiality existed.
President Nixon was known to be very depressed and abusing alcohol at the end of his time in office. President Kennedy took heavy pain medications that could have affected his judgment. President Reagan, at the end of his time in office, was known to be suffering from dementia. And now we have President Trump, who with COVID and the drugs he's on, that combination could be affecting the clarity of his thinking. All people are fallible. Nobody is perfect. Yet we entrust the fate of the world, literally, to one fallible human.
What if China or Russia or some other country just launched a surprise attack on the United States? Wouldn't have much time to get everybody together to make a decision.
You wouldn't have much time, that's true. But I think an attack like that is highly unlikely for the simple reason that it would be suicide. If Russia or China were to launch a surprise attack against the United States would maintain the ability to retaliate even after a first strike. That's why we have 14 submarines, most of which are deployed at sea with nuclear weapons. They are not vulnerable to a strike. So even if there were a surprise attack, we would be able to retaliate. That is deterrence. That is why we have not been attacked with nuclear weapons for their 75-year history.
You mentioned Richard Nixon. It was my understanding that while he was president, while he was depressed, while he was drinking, Alexander Haig and some other people who were working there told the generals not to follow his orders. Even though that's not legal, they did that.
It's not legal. So if the president had actually given a nuclear launch order, the military chain of command should have not listened to that illegal advice. and presumably the military launch order would have been carried out.
How could it be legally or politically? How could it be dealt with?
The simple approach would be for the president to share the authority with Congress. So the president could not order the first use of nuclear weapons without concurrence of Congress or some subset of Congress. Or alternatively, the president could just initiate a policy saying we will never use nuclear weapons first, known as a no first use policy. In both cases, you wouldn't have the president with the ability that they have today to, on their own authority, without checking with anyone else, launch nuclear weapons within minutes.
And that is Tom Colina. He's policy director for the Plowshares Fund. And in more science news, the Nobel Prize in Chemistry was jointly awarded on Wednesday to Emmanuel Charpentier and Jennifer A. Doudna for their 2012 work on CRISPR, a method to edit DNA. The announcement marks the first time the award has gone to two women. But Dr. Stuart Newman, a professor of cell biology and anatomy at New York Medical College, says there's a dark side to CRISPR technology. It's used to create changes in the germline, the inherited line of genes passed through generations.
It was given for development of this technique called CRISPR, which is a genetic engineering technique that more accurate and precise than ones that have existed before. We've been doing genetic engineering since the 1970s, but this makes it much more easy.
What is the potential good from this? And then there's always a potential bad.
It's a really excellent research technique. We can learn much more about biology, about biological systems, by making genetic modifications in experimental organisms and seeing what changes result. So we can deepen our knowledge. A lot of Nobel Prizes in recent years have been given for techniques rather than new understanding or new theories or new concepts. And this is one that was for a technique. It also has applications to human health. If somebody has cancer, you could genetically engineer some of their T cells, their immune cells, to fight the cancer. So there's a lot of applications like that. There's applications, if people are blind, it's possible to modify the cells in the retina and possibly make them see again. So there are a lot of very positive applications. But then the ones that are touted the most and written about the most are the possibility of genetically engineering people before they even exist. This is kind of prospective genetic engineering. Sometimes it's called germline genetic engineering because when you do this kind of engineering, it gets passed into future generations. But even if it didn't get passed into future generations, it would still be very troublesome because you're doing experiments on people who don't yet exist and hoping for the best. Sometimes the way any scientific project occurs, if you get it to work more than 60 or 70% of the time, you're really lucky and you could publish a paper on it. But that's not good enough to do on human beings. So why do it? So this is what the real issue is. And people are promoting it as if CRISPR is flawless. It can work without any problems at all. And that's not the case.
Are we looking at the ability to make people super smart, the ability to make soldiers who don't feel pain, the ability to create totally loyal? I mean, what we're talking about, Aldous Huxley, Brave New World.
Right. You know? That's what the prospect is, and that's what some people want to do. And the problem is, and this is rarely written about, the problem is that you really can't do it reliably. So just imagine, you might say, we want to have somebody that doesn't catch viruses, that would never get COVID or AIDS or something like that. You could try it, but what if it makes them more susceptible to viruses? What do you do with that person? Who's going to pay for that person's health care throughout the rest of their life because they were screwed up even before they were born?
Experiments that fail, what do you do with the people?
Precisely. Are you going to say, oh, you can't have children because we messed up your germline? The thing is that most of what you're going to read about is CRISPR is super accurate. There are some technical problems that need to be overcome before it's done on pre-existing people, prospective people. But once those technical problems are solved, then we can start with diseases, and then we could kind of touch people up, make them taller, make them smarter, make them stronger, whatever.
You think that's ethical? Is that ethically proper?
I think it's totally non-ethical, totally unethical.
Should we be like in Star Trek World of the Future, the Federation, make this illegal?
Yes, we should. Yes, that's my view. And I think that people should be very critical when they read about these things, because you have a lot of concerned people writing, well, not ready to be done yet, but, you know, we still have 15 more years of deep research to do, and then we'll start doing it, or 5 years more. But the thing is that it's, in principle, it's something that can't be done reliably. And the reason why is that biological systems are not engineered systems. They're evolved systems. They're systems that we don't really understand the principles of how they were put together over billions of years. You can engineer a car because you have the blueprint for it. You have the schematics, and you can take out one part and put in another part. But you can't engineer an organism. You can mess with an organism. You can modify an organism. But you can't engineer it because you don't know what the constructive principles behind it are.
Dr. Stuart Newman is professor of cell biology and anatomy at New York Medical College. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Orthodox Jews held a massive protest in Brooklyn on Wednesday night, rallying against COVID-19 restrictions enacted by Mayor Bill de Blasio, while also showing strong support for President Donald Trump by holding a rally. Mayor de Blasio explained how the police will deal with the protests at a news conference earlier today.
The vast majority of demonstrations in the city of all persuasions, all across the political spectrum, over the last 6 months or more, have been peaceful, and the NYPD has had a presence but has stayed back and, of course, let peaceful protest continue. That's been the norm for decades in the city. That's how it's been the vast majority of times. Any time, unfortunately, where there has been violence towards individuals, towards property, of course, violence towards police officers, unacceptable, all of that unacceptable, there's been more response. What we have here is something where we absolutely must have consistency of response. We have to ensure that all communities are treated the same way. I think we had a difference last night than the night before. The night before was something that was not expected in terms of a crowd, and there was very limited police presence. Last night, my understanding is there was much more police presence. But as I said earlier this morning, we need to get very clear. We're in a different situation now. It's the first time we have had the reimposition of restrictions since this crisis began. That comes with additional legal tools for the NYPD. The lawyers all have to get on the same page. The NYPD has to get on the same page with the lawyers. And I expect from tonight on a much clearer approach to enforcement. It's crucial all New Yorkers understand that everyone's going to be treated the same. And in fact, where there's restrictions in place, the bar goes up, meaning it's going to be even more important to ensure that people are safe and the NYPD intervenes whenever there's a problem.
Orthodox reporter said he was attacked by an angry mob at the protests in Borough Park last night. The reporter, Jacob Kornbluh, said protesters yelled that he was a Nazi and Hitler as they chased after him during a second night of unrest over the government attempt to stop the surging cases of COVID-19 in Brooklyn. And with COVID infections rising in Brooklyn and Queens, Health Commissioner David Chokshi explained why the lockdowns and mask orders are necessary and what he's doing to educate New Yorkers to why they are needed.
There is no herd immunity in any of the neighborhoods where we're most concerned or any other neighborhood in New York City. This is so important to ensure that people understand that, unfortunately, the coronavirus continues to be very infectious, continues to spread, and so we have to take the precautions that we are embarking upon. We know from multiple different types of data that there has been an increase in cases, there has been an increase in the proportion of tests coming back positive in the areas that we are most concerned, particularly in the red and orange zones in the state designation. And that's why we have been communicating those results over the last few days, but also the last few weeks as we started to see upticks in those numbers that had us very concerned. With respect to outreach, I'll just add, beyond all of the outreach that has been done to community leaders and faith leaders and the leaders of private schools and other core institutions in these communities, we have worked very hard in partnership with the trusted clinicians, the healthcare providers who have been taking care of people in these neighborhoods. What we hear from them is along with us, you know, a growing sense of concern and alarm, because they know what will happen if we don't get this growth in cases under control. Like all of us who have been doctors over the last few months, we've seen so much suffering and tragedy, and this is our chance to try to prevent as much of it as possible. So we've done that in a way that communicates our guidance, our public health guidance, as well as our clinical guidance. We do webinars with healthcare providers. We also work with them to ensure that testing is as accessible and available as possible. And so, for example, the Test and Trace Corps has delivered testing machines to those trusted providers so that patients who are coming to them are also able to get tested as rapidly and as expansively as possible.
Health Commissioner David Choksi. And that's some of the news for Thursday, October 8, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul D'Arienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.